talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. Remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. I want to start with Gableman again. Michael Gableman, a 108-page brief has just been filed in connection with the ethics complaint against him in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I want to quote from it because I am convinced after looking at this brief that the attorney's fees paid by taxpayers to defend Gableman from his own misconduct is really going to soar. Here's what it says. Gableman's conduct amounted to a dishonest and destructive campaign against Wisconsin's democracy at taxpayer expense and in the guise of being a public official. Gableman repeatedly violated the rules of professional conduct, and we question his honesty, trustworthiness, and fitness to be a Wisconsin attorney. In addition to incompetently practicing law, he repeatedly failed in his duties of honesty and candor. He used legal process to harass and maliciously injure his targets, and he violated multiple provisions of the attorney oath. Now, some of the things he did are familiar to you and to me. He petitioned the court to throw in jail the mayors of Green Bay, mayor of Madison, and election heads in those cities and in Milwaukee. Never went anywhere, but there's a lot of expensive briefing about it. And they simply said, we're happy to testify and to be interviewed, but we want it in public the way the statute demands. Statute suggests, or I think demands, that actually be before the legislature in Madison in a public committee hearing. He wanted it in an unnamed office in Brookfield. Didn't have any identification on it. It'd be locked and the media would be excluded. Also, much of this litigation is about public record requests that he blew off, denied, and simply hid the records. Here's my concern. Right now, the money, taxpayer money that's coming out of this is about $2.5 million. I initially thought maybe it would go over $3 million, which is wrong. It shouldn't be out of taxpayer money at all. But at what point is Robin Voss going to dip into taxpayer money without any oversight, any structure, any ability of the governor to weigh in by veto, any ability of legislators in his own party or the Democratic Party to even discuss it, debate it, or find out about it until it's well after the fact? Where's it going to stop? So the newspaper article said, well, maybe $3 million. Let me tell you something from experience, having seen these kinds of cases before. When you accuse somebody of this degree of misconduct, first of all, insurers frequently won't pay. These are intentional acts. And if there's an intentional act, intentional misconduct, they shouldn't have their attorney's fees paid. It's just too easy to keep up the appeals. There was a case involving a judge in Milwaukee County, and this is going back 50 years, certainly 40 years, 45. Where he was accused of inappropriately touching a woman on an elevator in the courthouse and taking a rental car from a dealership for hardly any money, and a nominal payment, which obviously would affect his decisions from the bench. Wisconsin Supreme Court yanked him from being a judge. He appealed that all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court didn't take the case, but he had to file a petition for writ of certiorari, which is very expensive. And nowadays you have to print them. And there are printing services that do it, and they're very expensive. Lawyer fees are very expensive. And the point is that every contact with the law, everywhere along the way, there's no incentive to Gableman to be reasonable, to stop the appeals, to apologize, to try to work something out. Just keep it up because the attorney's fees are flowing. It's almost as if he has an IV in the taxpayer's veins and the blood just keeps coming out and he doesn't care. He doesn't care. The other important aspect of this is that, remember, Dan Kelly, who's running for the Supreme Court right now, traveled around the state with Gableman, making this false pitch that there was fraud. And he was getting paid, too, except he was getting paid by the Republican Party. Gableman was getting paid by taxpayers, you, me, because the fact is that Voss was afraid of Donald Trump, thought he would appease Trump by setting this guy loose around the state, and who cares what he found? It turns out he didn't find anything. And it's only a couple of million bucks. What the heck? Well, a couple of million bucks is a couple of million bucks, a lot of money. But Kelly was in on this. Kelly was going around the state with Gableman. He was paid by the Republican Party. Paid almost $120,000 personally in his firm, his consulting firm. And $40,000 of it was after he'd announced Supreme Court. And that was kept under wraps. And $40,000 of it, some of that $40,000 was paid in December. This is beginning of March, when he was well into the fighting over the Supreme Court race. So what do you do with this? Well, you do two things. One of them is Kelly cannot be elected. If Kelly is elected when he was on the payroll of the political party that tried to toss out the results of a fair election and even conscripted three justices who were sympathetic to the Republican Party to rule that Biden should not be certified, even though he won the election by over 20,000 votes. If that guy gets on, you're just putting somebody on who's in the pay of the Republican Party. That's wrong. It's wrong. It's fraudulent. Very, very wrong. But the other part of this is, at what point do taxpayers stop paying for Gableman's appeals? Gableman issued a report a long time ago fessing up that he found no fraud. He did his best to gin it up, and he couldn't gin it up. Travels around with Kelly, who's being paid to cook up this fake electors scheme. But how long can this guy just keep an open tab? It's like an open bar tab. How long can he keep it up with somebody else paying for it, which is the taxpayers? There are multiple cases pending against him and Voss. Voss just got hit with about $135,000 judgment for attorney's fees for not responding to open records requests and hiding documents. And he says he's not going to pay for it. He says that's fair, as quote, fairly, end quote, a taxpayer expense. That's not a taxpayer expense. That's misconduct. It's intentional conduct. Even insurance companies do not insure intentional conduct. If you get in a car accident, they'll cover you. If you deliberately ram a guy with the car because you want to kill him, they won't cover it. I mean, that's black letter law. And at what point, if an insurance company doesn't cover intentional conduct, and I even mean D&O insurance, director and officer insurance, CEO insurance, that kind of thing, at what point are the taxpayers supposed to simply sit back and go, well, okay, then we'll pick it up. What the heck? We'll pick it up. This can go on. This can go on to a petition for a writ of certiorari to the U.S. Supreme Court. And this can get into the very, very high millions. And it's simply not right. But they have a gerrymandered legislature. It's one other reason, very, very important to get Janet Protasiewicz on that court. Because a Supreme Court that was honest, not a Supreme Court that voted not to certify Biden and sympathize with Gableman, but one that was honest, would say, you can't use taxpayer money to represent intentional conduct. We need a Supreme Court that says that. We haven't had it for a long time, because the fact is that Scott Walker, back in 2010, gerrymandered this legislature when he got elected, and it's now gerrymandered on track till 2030. That's 20 years of the 21st century. It's 20%. There's a fifth of the whole century that clown was able to get away with that. And now the only way we're going to put an end to it, absolutely the only way put an end to it, is to get Janet Proto to say what's on there. I'm going to the lines quickly. Gene and Beauclair, my friend, little time before the break. What's in your mind, Gene?
Thank you so much for all this information. I got a quick question, and that is, how in the devil can they, charge the taxpayers for this? I thought Voss let him go. Why are we still paying? He's not on this case anymore. How in the devil can we be,
very good point. You know, Voss fired him because this guy, Gableman, turned on Voss like a dog and endorsed Adam Steen, Voss's primary opponent, for the assembly reelection, and Voss barely won. I mean, Adam Steen was a guy in his 20s with no credentials at all, but Trump endorsed him because he saw that Voss was weak, and Steen almost knocked him off in retaliation for that, not because of the other things Gableman did. In retaliation for that, Voss fired him. And you just posed an excellent question. If Voss fired him for misconduct, which is what he said it was, and of course it was, also for turning on Voss, why are we continuing to pay out of taxpayer money the appeals fees for a guy who is fired for wrongdoing? Why should we do that? No insurance company would do that. Why should we do it? In some of these cases, it may be that Voss and the Republican Party are also parties, but cut Gableman loose. Cut him loose. Tell him to go out. He's a lawyer arguing himself. Thanks, Gene. We're going to the break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna...
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to dig down a little deeper in what's underpinning our Senate majority, because this is going to have a real impact on some legislation coming up in the U.S. Senate. Right now, we have two ill Democratic senators. Fetterman of Pennsylvania and Dianne Feinstein of California. Dianne Feinstein has left for unspecified reasons, for health reasons, and she has 2 years left in her term. She is not up till 2024. It's November of 2024, and her successor won't be sworn in until January of 2025. It's almost 2 years from now. And I don't think it's any secret. She has early stage, maybe not all that early, dementia. Fetterman is a good man. I like Fetterman a lot. I like her a lot. She was a great senator. Fetterman has a clinical depression. I've never suffered from that illness. It's a terrible illness. I've known people who have. And he is in treatment. Treatment involves medication for depression. Does not affect him cognitively. And he should be back in the Senate. But right now, he's not. Right now, the Senate is 48-48, because we're missing Fetterman and Feinstein. And the Republicans right now are missing Casey. No, that's us. Let me look at here what we have. Crapo, he's the guy from Wyoming. We're missing him. They're missing him because he has COVID. But we're also missing right now Merkley of Oregon, who stepped out briefly. His mother passed away, and he's out for the final arrangements. And Casey of Pennsylvania, who apparently has prostate cancer, is being treated for it. You put that all together, the Republicans are down one from 49, and we're down three, because Merkley really should be coming back soon, from 51. Now, what do you do at 48-48? Well, I'll tell you what you do. Kamala Harris has to stay very close to the Capitol and come in and break the tie. But what happens if somebody else gets sick? What happens if, God forbid, Bernie gets really sick in Vermont? You know, if Bernie passes away, Vermont has a Republican governor. And the fact of the matter is, you would not have a Democrat appointed. Our majority is precarious. One way to do this would be to have Schumer change the Senate rules and have senators be able to vote remotely just the way the House did under Pelosi because of COVID. Remember Strom Thurmond? He was the senator from South Carolina who served well into almost 100. And when he went around, he had dementia. He didn't know where he was. But he had a chief of staff who was very smart and was a hardcore Republican. And he would just sit in the Republican caucus, and then he would vote Strom Thurmond the way they told him to. Now, I do not know if they would bring Thurmond in up to the voting thing and take his bony finger and stick it on the button or whatever. Back when John Kennedy was in the Senate in the 1950s, they had a thing called pairing. I don't know if they do that anymore because there's such animosity in the Senate, but it was pairing. John Kennedy was out for surgery at one point. He's going to be gone 2 weeks. And he calls a guy in the Republican Party, and there's, you know, let's say five bills coming up. He says, you know, I'm going to vote for the Democrats. You're going to vote for the Republicans. Pair me. Republican was honorable. He'd go in and he'd say, Senator Kennedy would do this way. I would do this way. Therefore, neither one of us will vote. And basically, it took care of it that way. I do not think that the Republican Party is honorable right now to do it that way so that Fetterman and Feinstein can pair. I think we have got to have remote voting because of illness. It has to be safe of illness. B, hope Fetterman gets back there quite quickly, and Casey as well after his prostate surgery, and Merkley obviously after the arrangements for his mother's passing. Crapo presumably will come back after COVID. But we have to watch this. When's Feinstein coming back? She doesn't say when she's coming back. There's got to be a way in California to remove her from the seat and have Gavin Newsom appoint somebody or have a special election. Otherwise, for 2 years, she's wandering around out there. We have 50 votes, not 51. We're biting our fingernails. Wisco Paul, my friend, thanks for calling. You're on. Wisco Paul, what's in your mind today?
That's called hanging by a thread there in the U.S. Senate by the Democrats.
Got it.
Boy, oh boy. Hey, I'll just make one quick point today. Right now, you have three election deniers on the Supreme Court. One's a retiring. You can't replace her with another one, and his name is Kelly. It's because the GOP is corrupt in this state right now. Voss and his boys are corrupt. There's no other way to say that. And the only thing that stops him from being totally corrupt is, of course, Tony Evers. So, God, I'm praying to God we can get Judge Janet on the Supreme Court is what I'm trying to say. All I'm asking for, Matt, really is fair maps and a democracy.
Right.
That's all I'm asking for. All right, you have a great weekend, Matt. Thanks for taking my call again. Bye.
Same to you. No, you hit the nail on the head. Fair maps would result in a 50-50 legislature, possibly at one point in our favor. Voss wouldn't be the speaker. Either we'd have the speaker, or there'd have to be somebody on the Republican side who is more moderate. And that's gerrymandering is not democracy. It's commie government. It's fake government. You have somebody that gets 48% of the vote, and they get 67% of the seats. That is not democracy. It's fake democracy. It's the appearance of law without the reality or the actuality of law. As always, thanks a lot for calling in, Paul. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Matt Flynn, Rick. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Andy of Beaver Dam, my friend. Thanks for coming. What's your mind, Andy?
I've been trying to get over some gout the last couple of days, but I tried to keep in touch with your show. And I want to second the fact by Whistle Paul. Today goes about how Janet's advertising, Janet's political ads are above board and doing a good job and so forth. I think that I don't know how anybody in their right mind would vote for Dan Kelly after all the revelations of what he's done and his performance in the court when he was in there for a while. But this is this would be a hypothetical or theoretical question, and that is, once we get Judge Janet in there, I wonder how long it's going to take us. You know, the whole case has to go, somebody has to present a complaint to the court about the gerrymandering, and then we get in there, and then, of course, it's up to the voters to try to change the theme of things after things get leveled out, you know. And I know that's kind of a hard thing to predict, but you think we could probably, after two sessions, be back on a level playing field, do you think, in the legislature? Or have you ever thought about that? To try to get things on a level.
Yeah, Andy, that is a really, really good and deep question. What Andy is saying is, we've been taking a lot for granted. We elect Judge Janet. She gets, by the way, that election is 4 weeks from this coming Tuesday. 4 weeks from this coming Tuesday. Make sure you vote. Make sure you get out and either absentee by mail or absentee in person, which is what I like to do. I, here in Milwaukee, go down to the municipal building and go in a week or so beforehand, very short lines, just vote and take care of it. But Andy's question is, how quick after that are we going to get fair maps, given the law? Remember, if you read Hamlet in the Hamlet soliloquy, remember, to be or not to be, that is the question, whether 'tis better, and so on. And one of the things he cites is the law's delay. That's in that soliloquy, the law's delay, which leads scholar to believe that maybe Shakespeare, when he was young and got out of school, may have worked as a clerk in a law office for a while in Stratford. But in any event, the law is delayed. Well, here's the timeline, Andy. First of all, she gets elected April 4th. She doesn't get sworn in till the first business day in August. So that would be April, May, June, July. It would basically be 4 more months. She has said, she's really terrific. You know, she doesn't pull any punches. She's very tough in a good way. She said, bring a redistricting suit the day after I'm sworn in. That's what she said, which is really, really good. Now, that suit, when they bring the suit, and it may be the day after, the week after, it'll be, I hope, sometime in August. You're right that normally that would be filed in a district court, which it will be. And I assume it'll be district court in Dane County. That's where the capital is. And they are able to use a procedure, and I've not talked to the people liable to bring it, so I don't know. But what I would do is to have original jurisdiction in the Supreme Court itself. Forget about the trial court. Forget about the Court of Appeals. Do it right in the Supreme Court. The Republicans try that all the time when they control the Supreme Court. Now, would the Supreme Court allow it? When Janet is on there, there'll be four. And when I say Democrats, they're really very independent. In other words, the four of them would vote to certify whoever wins in 2024, even if it's Trump, God forbid. But the Republicans would only vote to certify a Republican. But on gerrymander, will the four of them agree that it should be expedited and permit an original filing in the Wisconsin Supreme Court? I don't know. If they did that, then I think the Republicans would have to have a certain amount of time to file a brief. There'd be a briefing schedule. It'll go into the fall. There'd be oral arguments sometime in the late fall or the winter, maybe early spring, and they come out with a decision. The decision, the relief that I would ask is that they just appoint a special master, they call it, you know, some experts and, you know, fair experts. In other words, like the fair maps in Iowa, some experts from, say, the UW faculty, experts in statistics and in political science, and the master would then come up with proposed maps. The Republicans then would try to petition for review for writ of certiorari in the U.S. Supreme Court. That could chew up a little time. So you're talking well into the following year, well into 2024 at least, and that would be expedited. Now, if it went to the Dane County Circuit Court, the Republicans could try a sneaky maneuver. They could say, well, look, put it back in the legislature and we'll give it a real fair look. Snicker, snicker, snicker. Then they'll tie it up forever, put it in a committee, take a year or two, and come out with just as bad maps. I think that the Supreme Court, with Janet Protasiewicz casting the vote, would have to strongly consider just taking original jurisdiction, not permitting this malarkey, and then just appointing a master. They can't control what happens in the U.S. Supreme Court. They can't control the six tarantulas who might overrule them. But this would not be racial. It wouldn't be voting rights. It would be the Supreme Court. And the only way that the U.S. Supreme Court could overrule them is under the independent legislature theory, which I want to get to right now. So the short answer, Andy, is it won't be soon. It will not be, certainly not the 2024 elections. It wouldn't be in place, in my judgment. It could be in place by the 2026 elections. But what I just said, you know, your question is a great segue into probably the most important issue right now. Moore versus Harper, North Carolina. And there's a development, and this is in our segment right now. The U.S. Supreme Court just asked for supplemental briefs in Moore versus Harper. What is this all about? If you haven't listened to this show regularly, may not be aware of some of the background. In North Carolina, which is where that case came out of, and it would affect Wisconsin, in North Carolina, they had a Democratic majority Supreme Court a couple of years ago. The Republican gerrymandered legislature gerrymandered it so bad, it was as bad as Wisconsin, and it cut out a lot of minority voters, put them in districts where they're not going to have any influence. The North Carolina Supreme Court overturned it. They said that it violated the North Carolina Constitution, which the U.S. Supreme Court shouldn't have anything to do about. Said it violated the North Carolina Constitution. The Republicans appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. They had a petition for certiorari that was granted, which means that four of the nine probably want to overturn the Democratic North Carolina Supreme Court. What then happened was there was another interim election and the Republicans went like gangbusters and they took back the Supreme Court. So now I think they have a pretty substantial majority, like a three vote majority. It's either 5-2. I think it's 5-2 down there now. And they are going ahead to rehear it, and they're going to overturn what the Democratic Supreme Court did down there and say the legislature acted appropriately under the North Carolina Constitution. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court looked at that. This is the case of Moore v. Harper. Said, well, if that's the case, and a Republican Supreme Court is saying that the legislature's plan is okay, then our case is moot, M-O-O-T. What does that mean? Moot is a legal word that simply means it's already, there's nothing to decide. It's all done. There's nobody down there in the Republican or Democratic Party anymore asking us to overturn the Supreme Court because it looks like they're about to go the other way. And this is a dirty little secret. It's the way that the U.S. Supreme Court likes because there are six tarantulas who have gutted the Voting Rights Act and apparently like to see minority voters get screwed out of seats, to put it in the vernacular. When that supplemental briefing is done in the U.S. Supreme Court, I think, and a lot of legal observers think, that the U.S. Supreme Court will say that the petition for writ of certiorari was improvidently granted, it's now moot, and dismiss the case for mootness. However, that lingering question of the independent legislature theory remains. And here is the fly in the ointment. In the U.S. Constitution, which goes back to the late 1700s, it originally said that U.S. senators are picked by the state legislators, not by popular election, and the U.S. presidential electors are picked by legislators, basically. 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago, there was a constitutional amendment that changed the Senate deal. So now all senators, because of that constitutional amendment, are picked by popular vote. And that was because progressive Republicans like Fighting Bob La Follette said, we have a corrupt Senate. They're all picked by insiders and they're all crooked as hell. And he was right. But the point is, if presidents are picked that way, they'll also be crooked as hell. And there's no constitutional amendment that ever changed the provision that says presidential electors are picked by popular vote. It just has evolved that way. And in Moore v. Harper, the dirty little secret is that the six tarantulas want to invoke that and say the state legislators can do anything they want on elections and we can't do anything about it. But neither can state Supreme Courts, neither can Janet Protasiewicz, neither can state constitutions have anything to say about it. That is a lawless, fascistic thing to say. No scholar believes that. But there are six of them up there who are tarantulas. Four of them believe that already, at least. That's Alito, Clarence Thomas, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. The three Democrats don't believe it and wouldn't vote that way. But there are two other tarantulas, which is Roberts and Amy Comey Barrett. And no one knows if they have the guts to go that far. Because what that means is, in a lot of swing states especially, the legislature will decide who the presidential vote goes for. Your vote in a primary, in an election for president is a beauty contest. Wisconsin's one of them. Voss would then control that. Arizona is another one. Pennsylvania is another one. And it's possible, Michigan right now seems to have come around, but Georgia is another one, and Nevada is another one. And what do you think the states were that were the swing states that threw it to Biden? Arizona, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Georgia. And if five of them have gerrymandered legislators picking the president, they'll pick the Republican, they'll pick Trump. Trump will take us out of NATO, sacrifice Ukraine, sacrifice Moldova, sacrifice Poland. Ramzan Kardakov, the Chechenian Islamic terrorist, has said that they should go into Poland. He said that. And East Germany, he said that. Medvedev, the number two guy in Russia, has said, basically, if this keeps up, we may have nuclear war. The clown Trump may be put in by crooks in those five legislatures because of the six tarantulas on the Supreme Court. Do not take this lightly. Going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I see you all on the line. Do not hang up. But a Bill of Economwalk first. Thanks for calling, Bill. What's in your mind today?
Matt, you got to keep harping on what you were talking about today. That, you know, Wisconsin, there's too many voters in Wisconsin that don't understand that the majority is controlled by the minority by legislating from the bench. That's what's going on. We've got the Supreme Court, whether state or national, federal, they're running our country by making decisions for us. The people are done as far as democracy if this continues. I know you did. I did. I listened to hearings. And when Kamala Harris interrogated Brett Kavanaugh, no wonder they don't like her. She drilled him up one side and down the other. And I think he perjured himself. Or if he didn't perjure himself, he was guilty by just the mere fact of the way he was testifying. These people, if this gets any worse and we don't have any balance, it's over. And I think you got to keep teaching people that. They think democracy is, you know, the people's choice. That's going out the window. But thanks so much for what you do, and have a good weekend.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Yeah, no, that's a really profound statement. Here's the deal. Fascism creeps in on little cat's feet, and people who want authoritarian rule have found a way to do it. They found it through the federal judiciary. The problem is, in a normal society, a normal democracy, we like to have a respected federal judiciary who occasionally make a tough decision, and people obey it because they have legitimacy. But if they vote Moore v. Harper the next time around that issue comes up about the independent legislature theory, to take away your right to vote for president, to take away your right to vote for president after you've had it for well over 150 years, I'm afraid there's going to be violence. And I don't want that. And that would be wrong. And the truth of the matter is, and this is another dirty little secret, there's nothing in the Constitution that gives them the authority to do what they're doing. There isn't a provision in the Constitution that says the U.S. Supreme Court may review legislation of Congress and acts of the executive and determine in its sole discretion whether or not they are constitutional. That does not appear in the Constitution. In 1803, there was a case called Marbury v. Madison. And the Supreme Court, for the first time, just said it. And back then, everybody's running around a musket and a coonskin hat, and they're lucky as hell if they have food, and nobody pays much attention. And throughout the 19th century, they kept ratcheting up. During the Civil War, Dred Scott decision, they said a black man couldn't be a citizen, couldn't be free. Nobody asked them to do that. And Lincoln said, the hell with you. And there was a Civil War. 1890s, Plessy v. Ferguson, they said a black guy can't sit with a white guy on a train. Nobody asked them to do that. They didn't have the right to do that. Now, with Brown versus Board of Education, 1954, they did the right thing. So, you know, you like it when they do the right thing. But here's the deal. They don't have the right to do any of this. They certainly don't have the right to take away your vote, right to vote for president. But if they do something like that, you have the MAGA mob of Trump prepared to do violence. And then you're going to have a lot of people who are going to say, oh, no, we're going to vote for president. And if Joe Biden or Joe Schmo wins in Wisconsin and you put Trump in so he can take us out of NATO, betray us to the Ruskies, that's treason. And we are going to do something about that. Because remember, one final thing before I go to the next caller, 1776, there was a court who told us what to do. It was the British court, High Court, and what taxes were constitutional and told us to screw ourselves. And you know what happened? small shop owners and farmers in Lexington Concord said, no way, Jose. And so did George Washington down in Virginia, and so did a hell of a lot of people. They took matters in their own hands. We can't have that again. But these six tarantulas cannot be permitted to take away our right to vote for president. Period. End of story. Thanks for calling, Bill. Tatter Billy, my friend. You're next. What's in your mind today, Tatter Billy?
Hey, Matt. I'm just thinking about, you know, I feel like, you know, as much as I think we're on the right side of history, we're on the right side of morality, we're on the right side of kind of demographic shifts in the country and that sort of thing, you know, we're not the only ones. And I'm just concerned that there's just so many entities out there and groups that kind of seem to be irredeemable, seem to be, you know, that we'd be better off just writing them off. And first among those, I think, is Russia, for instance. And you talk about Russia a lot, and in a way that, you know, it's just kind of irredeemable. And so I think maybe it is, and I feel like the Republican Party has kind of become irredeemable. That scares me. Like, where does that leave us? How can we function in a world when so many different factions of our world are just irredeemable? Talking about the Supreme Court, too, or the Wisconsin Congress. Just, they're so far gone. But how can we proceed when that's the case?
That is a terrific question. And unfortunately, I have 2 minutes left today and then the weekend. But on Monday, that's going to be a lead segment on Monday. And I'll tell you a little bit. I think you're right about Russia. There are 145 million people squatting on 11 time zones of gas and oil. They're savage. They're genocidal sadists. Their leadership are. The people haven't accomplished anything in 123 years since Tolstoy, Pushkin, Dostoevsky, Tchaikovsky, and so on. And that's because they lock them up and they murder them. Stalin murdered every intellectual, and Putin's doing it again. But what do you do? They have nuclear weapons. I'm going to address that on Monday. The second thing with the Republican Party is absolutely true with the leadership. There are a few bright spots, and you may be surprised at who they are, but they're people who will stand up for our elections. And I'm talking about people like Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, believe it or not, Paul Ryan. All these people are people I disagree with on a lot of issues. But the question is, do they have integrity and do they stand up for democracy? Another one, frankly, is this Gallagher up in Green Bay. He's a guy that I don't agree with much at all, but I do not believe that he would attack our democracy. Another guy is this guy, Tony, who ran for attorney general in Wisconsin, didn't make it. He beat 2 election deniers, and he was pretty savvy about pretending he was a bit of a denier here or there. But I have the feeling that deep in, down inside, he may be more of a traditional Republican. I don't know. We're going to talk about that. I think there are redeemable elements in the Republican Party, which I won't agree with on a lot of issues. But to me, the sole issue is fascism or American democracy, commie government or American democracy. That's why we need Janet Protasiewicz. We have to be careful about the six tarantulas overruling what the state Supreme Courts do. Coming to the end of the show. Thanks for calling, Tatter Billy. Great show. Great callers, as always. Matt Flynn Direct. We'll be back same time, same place Monday. Have a great weekend. I'm signing off for today.